it's a strange thing to think that a man like the Apostle Paul should be questioned as to the validity of his ministry and the authority of his apostleship. And that's exactly what was happening here in Corinth. And he takes up that question or that criticism against him in the opening verses of this chapter. And what he does here is to assert his authority as an apostle, to assert his calling and his mission. And that's why he begins as he does in verse 1. He says, "Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not ye my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle," and this is the criticism that was being laid against him. He says, "If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtless I am to you. For the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord." And so he's challenging this criticism. And he's saying now, he's saying, "I am an apostle. And the evidence of my apostleship is the fruit that the Lord has given." Verse 3, you'll see how he answers those who criticize him. He says, "Mine answer to them that do examine me is this: Have we not power to eat and to drink?" And what he means here is this. He means that he has the right to be sustained as a gospel minister, as a minister of Christ. Do we not have the authority to be maintained and sustained in the gospel ministry? Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles? In other words, he's saying, not only have I this right to receive sustenance from the church, but if I were to have a wife, then I would also have the right to have her supported. That's what he's saying here. He's claiming this right to maintenance, as well as other apostles and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas. Or I only and Barnabas, have we not power to forbear working? Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges? In other words, Paul is saying, I haven't done this of my own will or my own desire, my own volition. He says, he's inferring here that he has received this charge from the Lord. He's entered into this warfare, this battle. Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not of the fruit thereof? This is a natural argument. Or who feedeth a flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock? Say I these things as a man, or saith not the law the same also? For it is written in the law of Moses, Thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? This was the law, that the oxen was not to be muzzled while it was treading the corn. It was allowed to eat the corn that it was working to thresh. And so in the natural realm, God has provided for the animals that labor. And now he takes this and he says, why did God give that law in the natural realm? Well, verse 10, or saith he it altogether for our sakes? Is a question. And now the answer is, for our sakes. No doubt this is written, that he that plieth should plough in hope, and that he that thresheth in hope should be partaker of his hope. In other words, as a gospel minister, he had the right to be supported and sustained in temporal matters by the church. If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal or your material things? If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather So he's saying, I am an apostle. The evidence of my apostleship is you. And following on from that, the implication is that as an apostle, I have the right to be supported and maintained by the church. But then he says in verse 12, nevertheless, we have not used this power. In other words, he did not cash in this right, as it were. He did not use this. We have not used this right, this power that we have, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. And now he brings in the principle from the Old Testament priesthood. Do ye not know that they which minister about holy things live off the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar? Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live off the gospel. This is the Lord's pattern. But Paul says, I haven't used this power. If you go back to the book of Acts, when Acts chapter 18, when he came to the city of Corinth, Acts chapter 18 and verse 1, after these things Paul departed from Athens and came to Corinth, and he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, lately come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because that Claudius had commanded all Jews to depart from Rome and came unto them, and because he was of the same craft, he abode with them and wrought, for by their occupation they were tent makers. So this is what he's referring to now. He's saying, when I was among you, I did not claim this right. I did not become burdensome to the church at Corinth. As an apostle, I had the right to be supported, the right to be sustained, but I didn't use that right. And what we find him here doing is working. If you look, when you come into Acts chapter 20, he did the same thing in Ephesus, Acts chapter 20. And when he calls the elders, he rehearses the time that he was with them. And in verse 33 of Acts 20, he says, I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. Yea, ye yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. So you link this in with 1 Corinthians 9, and he says, nevertheless, we have not used this power. But we suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Now, he took wages from other churches, he tells us elsewhere. But in the case of Corinth, he realized that to do that at that time would hinder the cause of the gospel. And so he forwent that right that he had as an apostle. But he establishes the principle. He says, the Lord has ordained this. This is what the Lord has ordained. They that preach the gospel should live off the gospel. And then verse 15, 1 Corinthians 9, verse 15. But I have used none of these things. Neither have I written these things that it should be so done unto you. In other words, I'm not raising this now in order that you'll start paying me a wage. He says, that's not my intention. That's not my purpose or my motive. And then he says this, for it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. I don't glory in this, he says, that I have laid aside my right to the temporal maintenance that the Lord has ordained in the church for gospel ministers. I don't glory in this. No, there is a necessity that is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, if, in other words, if I'm doing this begrudgingly, then a dispensation of the gospel is committed onto me. In other words, he has failed to discharge his stewardship as a servant of Jesus Christ. Verse 18, what is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. He didn't want people in Corinth to say, here's one of these religious people coming and he's just good living for a living. He's just in this to get what he can out of it. Paul is saying here, he said, I want to be without charge, without this accusation, without this allegation, that I abuse not my power, my right in the gospel. For though I be free from all men, and when he uses the word free here, he's referring to his citizenship as a Roman. He was born a free man. And though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And here's his great objective now. This is what he's seeking to accomplish, to gain men and women, to win men and women onto Christ. And for this reason, this fledgling congregation and all the difficulty surrounding the work in Corinth, he sets aside his right as an apostle to be, as it were, a burden to the church to receive sustenance from them. He sets aside that right. He realizes that such are the circumstances in this fledgling congregation, such is the hostility round about, that it could become a hindrance to the gospel if he is seen to be in that way. And so he says, I have made myself servant unto all. My hands have attended to my own necessities. And then he says in verse 20, and unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, I became as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law, but not being without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible crown. This is now the grand motive that governed all that he was doing. He saw that incorruptible crown, that eternal reward. And he says in verse 26, I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. His great objective was something that he kept before him all the time. And that objective is set out there in verse 19 through to verse number 22. It's really highlighted and emphasized in the word gain. Verse 19, that I might gain the more. That I might gain the Jews. That I might gain them that are under the law. That I might gain them that are without the law, that I might gain the weak. This is his objective. The objective is to gain or to win men on to Christ. Verse 22, I am made all things to all men that I might by all means save some. That's not a reference to the idea that Paul would save the men or the people. But what he means there is that he might win them on to Christ, that they might be saved. The salvation of men and women. This was his objective. And it must be our objective. You'll notice not only his objective here, but you'll notice his method by which he went about this. He says, I am made all things to all men, that by all means I might save some. He endeavored, he realized this is the great objective, to gain men to Christ, to win them to Christ, that they might be saved. Salvation, the salvation of man is the great objective. But how do you go about it? And he sets out here how he went about it. I am made all things to all men. To the Jew, I became as a Jew. Those who are under the law, I became as under the law. Those who are without the law, the Gentiles, I became as without law, the ceremonial law. And if you study Paul's life and his ministry, you'll find that's exactly what he did. You remember he took Timothy and he had Timothy circumcised. Circumcision was not a requirement in the New Testament. But he had Timothy circumcised in order that it would not become a stumbling block among the Jews, even though it wasn't required. He would have Timothy subjected to that circumcision so that it would not become a matter of prejudice among the Jews. If they looked on Timothy and said he is uncircumcised, and right away there was a stumbling block because of the prejudice of the people. This is what he did in order to remove those stumbling blocks, to remove those hindrances, to gain people. He observed certain feasts. He went back to observe the Feast of Pentecost, those ceremonial feasts that were given to Israel, because he was seeking to gain the Jews. Those who were without law, i.e. the Gentiles, who were not subject to the ceremonial law, he was as one of them. He sought to comply with them in all things that were innocent. He brings in this proviso here in verse 21, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ. And so in other words, in a moral sense, he said, I didn't dispense with the moral law, but when it came to the ceremonial law that had been fulfilled in Christ and therefore had ended, well, I didn't seek to impose those things with the Gentiles. He recognized that there were some people who were weak. And he said, I became as weak. I didn't despise them. And I believe that he's referring here to possibly those Jewish believers who had embraced the gospel, but they still felt that they had to retain some aspects of the ceremonial law. Paul didn't trample under them and despise them. He recognized their weakness and he sought to gain them. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And I want you to notice something here that Paul says to the Corinthians. This is very interesting. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. and verse 15. All the time he's expressing this desire that he doesn't want to be a burden to them. Verse 14, "Behold, the third time I'm ready to come to you, I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. And I will very gladly spend and be spent for you, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. But be it so, I did not burden you. Nevertheless, being crafty, I caught you with guile." That's a tremendous statement. That tells me how Paul went about his evangelism. His aim was to gain men, to win them to Christ. He used all legitimate means. He recognized their condition. And he says here that he was crafty. And he caught them with guile. Now the word guile comes from a root that brings us to the fisherman. And when the fisherman's going out to catch fish, he uses his hook, but he puts bait on the hook. And the idea behind that is to send out a signal that is not the original intention. He's using guile. He's using bait. And this is what Paul did with the Corinthians. When he came among them, it was as if he did not reveal to them what his objective was. His objective was to win them to Christ. But in order to win them to Christ, he had to be crafty. He had to use bait. He had to use bait. And he says, "I caught you with guile." You remember how the Lord said, "I will make you fishers of men." Fishers of men. And so what he's saying here is that we must use all legitimate means that God has given in order to endeavor to gain men to Christ. Sometimes that means not disclosing the objective initially. That's what the Lord did with the woman of Samaria when he came to her. He didn't go right into eternal matters. That was his objective. But he talked to her first about water. "Give me water." And then he starts talking to her, and he says, "If thou knewest who it is that talked with thee, and the gift of God, thou wouldest ask of him living water. He'd have given thee living water." And the Lord is using the bait, as it were, in order to draw this woman to himself. Paul recognized how the Lord went about this task. And he himself used, this is not sinful deception. This is using wisdom in order to endeavor to win people to Christ. Using legitimate means. You know, Paul, when he went to Corinth, he started working among those who were tent makers. That was his occupation. That was his trade. And he's working with them, and I can visualize the scene. They're talking about the tent. They're talking about the new styles of tent that have come on the market. They're talking about the pros and the cons. And you can see that there's a relationship developing. There's a friendship developing. And it's developing on the basis of something that they have in common. But Paul hasn't disclosed his great objective. His objective is to gain men and women to Christ. But in order to obtain that objective, he goes about it in this way. He says, I caught you with guile. I was crafty. You didn't see it at the time. You didn't see what I was doing. But I was crafty. I remember listening to Pastor Willie Mullen, and he said, to win men, we have to be crafty. We have to be crafty to win men to Christ. And that is something that Paul is emphasizing. You can see his objective, you can see his method, but you can also see his realism. For look what he says in the text again in 1 Corinthians 9. Verse 22, I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Now note the word all. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save all. No, he doesn't use the word all at the end. He uses the word some. And that emphasizes the fact of Paul's realism. He realized that his efforts would not lead to the conversion of all, but only to the conversion of some. And he realized that the gospel would be a savor of life to some, but it would also be a savor of death to others. He was realistic, and he recognized that his efforts would not result in the conversion of all, but the conversion of some was his goal. And the Lord has placed us here at this stage in history, at this place, this location in the world, that we might seek to gain men for Christ. Let's ponder Paul's example here, and let's endeavor to be crafty to win men, to be crafty, to catch men with guile, to use legitimate things that in themselves they're not spiritual things, they're not the gospel, but we can use legitimate matters, legitimate things that relate to men in order that we might then bring in the gospel to them and reach them with Jesus Christ, with the gospel of Jesus Christ. So much there for us to ponder. We'll leave it there. And may the Lord bless his word.